Welcome to The Conscious Podcast, the go-to podcast for law firms looking to elevate their digital marketing strategies. I'm Laura Morris, social media manager at Conscious, and today I'm joined by my new co-host, marketing executive Ellie Phillips. In this episode, we examine one of the biggest challenges facing law firms today, attracting and retaining the next generation of legal talent. We're joined by Dino Dulab, founder of the Law Training Centre, the UK's first fully online accredited training provider for aspiring solicitors, lawyers and paralegals. Dino works directly with law students, graduates and career changers every day, giving him a unique perspective on what new entrants into the legal profession are really looking for, the barriers they face and how firms can adapt their recruitment strategies to meet these expectations. Let's get started. Dino, welcome to the Conscious Podcast. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm joined today by Ellie, who's our new co-host for the Conscious Podcast.
Hi, Dino. Great to meet you.
Likewise. I don't think I've been interviewed by two before, so I feel like I'm heading for a grilling in court here, but yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a first for us as well, so we're very excited. We're going to be talking to you today about the Law Training Centre and how you help people enter the legal profession in sort of non-traditional ways. So I'm going to just start and dive right into the questions. So can you just give us a quick overview of what you do and your role at the Law Training Centre?
Effectively, I lead the Law Training Centre together with our founder, my wife, Eve Dulab, where what we do is we specialize in the alternative pathways into law. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean all the routes that didn't actually exist when she and I were in law school, when we started out. And what that means in practical terms today, a lot's changed in the last 10 years since we really started. But we help people qualify as solicitors through the SQE preparation course route. We help people qualify as licensed conveyancers and purported practitioners, and they'll be ultimately regulated by the CLC, which is the Council for Licensed Conveyancers. And we also help people qualify through CILEX, the Chartered Institute of Legal Executives. And there's a range of pathways that people qualify through there, and they can also do advocacy, and just like a solicitor, advocate, or barrister can do as well, alongside other practice areas, as well as the notary academic training course. And that's with the preferred supplier by the Faculty Office of the Archbishop of Canterbury, who's the regulator for notary publics. That always gets a raised eyebrow because, yeah, very few people do know it. It's an amazing branch of the profession, of a regulator that's over 500 years old. And I think that sums up so much of what we do, in that we're working with the oldest legal regulator and some of the newest regulators in the market, with some who are running examinations on the latest sort of examining techniques and technology, and notaries sitting somewhere that's we've modernized as well, but it's traditionally seen as a much older pathway. They're no less dynamic, no less complex, no less interesting as a profession, just one you don't hear about. We do a few other things as well that complement what lawyers do and how they qualify, but we'll keep it focused on that for today, I think.
Brilliant, thank you. And so what prompted you to start the Law Training Centre?
The journey starts in law school in South Africa. That's where I grew up, and my wife Eve grew up in Greece, and she had to be in law school in South Africa for family reasons when they were moving. And what we discovered when we decided, we were very young, we're going to get married, we chose England as a middle ground because our law degrees are based on English common law. And this just expresses the reach of the English legal system and how fantastic it actually is and how unique it is compared to the other legal systems. But coming here, we noticed that the restriction on how to qualify was unbelievable. So there's crippling student debt. There was courses that nobody in the university even talked about. You were just told that you'd have to do them afterwards and you'd have to take out a loan. And both of us needed to be financially independent. We were married young. We just couldn't see how the system works for anybody. And I think a few years later, what really was the catalyst for us, we met a successful equity partner. He grew the property division of his law firm about tenfold. And he then told us he doesn't have an LPC, he doesn't even have a law degree. And he came into the profession via the real estate agency route, and he qualified as a chartered legal executive. And that was a real light bulb moment. Then we looked at what was on offer and said, look, how can we really modernize this? By that time, we had children. We really understood the pressures, especially for working women and working parents to kind of qualify. And all around us, we just saw amazing people who weren't able to qualify, not because they weren't didn't have the aptitude or the ability, but the system was just inaccessible for them.
I think that bit, especially about the working women as well. I think, I mean, that's true of a lot of industries. I think, trying to get the qualifications when you are the main parent a lot of the time is really difficult. Yeah. So you work closely with aspiring legal professionals every single day. How would you describe the current mood among people entering the legal profession today?
That's a really good question, actually. That's an interesting one. I mean, we work with people who are entering the profession as well as people who are already working in a law firm. So we've been blessed that, through the power of word of mouth and the way the legal industry works, we're working with 800 plus law firms now who entrust us to train their people through all the various routes that we do. Some of them dual qualify, cross qualify. So I get to speak to people in law firms, who are people who are doing the training, people who are making the decision about training, as well as people who are entering the law firm, and increasingly talking to more school leavers as well. And I think if I were to summarize them down into sort of three categories, just to, because it's a really broad spectrum, but there's a common theme. And I think we have people who are anxious. And when I mean that, it's about AI. There's a real anxiousness around AI replacing junior roles. And there's some data around, but it doesn't seem to show that AI is replacing junior roles, but there is anxiousness about this. And it's going to change things. In the same way, when I was at university, I used the internet to study, but the legal libraries, Practical Law, LexisNexis, these weren't fully developed yet. And I remember a firm in a very old school high street, a lawyer in an old school high street firm telling me I was cheating by using the internet to search case law instead of going to the physical law library in the firm and looking for the book. And I was like, but I've got the job done quicker. And he's like, well, that's not the way I did it. I was like, well, and bearing in mind this is 2002, 2003, something like that, so we just come past the millennial, the Y2K thing. If, for those of you of a certain age, it was a big deal. So we're going to see a shift. So there's anxious people, but there's also excited people. And these are people who see the opportunities through the SQB, which is to widely talked about, but it's also creating opportunities, and especially through the CLC and the Silex routes that we offer, people are seeing, well, wow, they can actually qualify for a fraction of the normal cost, and then seeing that firms are really supporting people. There's been an explosion in the amount of publicity around firms talking about this. So we've got people really excited as well. And then we've got someone, I guess, somewhere in the middle, I'd say the pragmatic person. And this is a person who is probably been in law for a while as a paralegal or legal assistant, something like that, fee earner. And they're looking to qualify, but they're looking for flexibility. And importantly, they're looking for purpose and a work-life balance. So the salary, the package, all of that, those flashy numbers that you see in the London law firms, they're actually looking for more than that. They want, this purpose and flexibility is really important factor for them. So they're quite discerning in what they're choosing to do, what to study, and how they're going to qualify, because they've been in the industry long enough to see the difference between TV law and real law.
Do you think that that is a fallout from COVID, where, obviously our work lives got turned upside down, we were all kind of hybrid working, or do you think that's just the new generation of workers coming into the workforce now?
I'm glad you put it that way, because I think COVID has a lot to answer for. COVID does a lot of heavy lifting. But, long before COVID existed, I was asking these questions, and I'm seeing people asking, really smart questions. They're asking about progression. They're asking about culture. They're asking about technology. I didn't buy it when I was at law school that simply, you just got to accept the way this is the way law firms do, as you see in the TV, because to be honest, some TV dramas have been toned down for what reality actually is and was. And people have been questioning and asking that. I mean, we get sent to university, you get sent to do higher education, further education, you work in this profession, and then you need to be curious, you need to be intelligent about your decisions. Of course, you're going to then start questioning what's going on. And I think COVID is sort of blamed for that, but it's not the main reason. I think the main reason is people are more bold. The generation, don't want to use the word younger because I still feel like I'm quite young. But I think people are really looking for more and asking about it. Yes, COVID has probably sort of brought that a little bit to the fore, especially around work-life balance and flexible working. But those questions around progression culture. So people are asking, look, what does progression actually look like? Because I saw in the job spec, you mentioned progression. What are you actually going to do as a law firm for me? You know, where is that written down that's going to happen? In the past, you wouldn't dare question that. You'd sort of have to accept whatever was told to you. Now, people ask. So I think, and I think that's a really good thing. As a law firm leader, I can imagine it feels challenging because your bandwidth is so full with running the business. But you know, taking that time or having an HR person, even a part-time HR person, to help with those cultural issues creates cohesion and progression in the firm that it does wonders for the bottom line, which is of course important, but more importantly, it does great things for the culture of the firm, which is ever more important with technology creeping into everything that we do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I agree. So, in terms of the current legal recruitment landscape, how is that looking at the moment? What trends are you currently seeing?
Depending where you read. So I use LinkedIn a lot, and it's really funny. I saw a post by a barrister saying in 1983, he was told there were too many lawyers, not enough work. I was told the same thing in about 2002. And some people are saying the same thing in 2025. But depending where you look for the data, it's quite hard to find the data. But some reports I've seen from reputable recruiters are talking about a 10,000 shortfall in terms of headcount of professionals in the UK legal services. And if you look at that, you think, oh, that's a huge number. But if you look at how many lawyers there are, there's only 200,000 on the roll between the SRA, the CLC, and Silex, and the notary public profession and barristers, and a population of 60 million plus. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of a percentage of the population. Then we look at the number of law firms. Now, we've had a lot of consolidation in the legal sector. So we've gone from 12,500 firms to about 9,500, 10,000, depending when you look at the data. It doesn't mean to mean there's a lot less law firms. Consolidation's happened. And certainly every firm I know, and that's hundreds, are hiring for at least one person. So if I were to extrapolate that across, say, 10,000 firms as a round number, that number of 10,000 being a shortfall doesn't surprise me at all. So everyone's recruiting, and certainly social media recruitment's exploded. I think the firms that have a LinkedIn presence, and I'm going to refer to LinkedIn a lot. I know there's other social platforms, but that's the one I tend to use more. But I need to learn how to use others as well. But you know, they use it a lot, and you see the job adverts. But most of it's not done as well as it should. And I'm talking to marketing experts, so you'll know what I'm talking about. Yeah. But also, there's, you know, when I look at what's going on, we're seeing the skills gap in really growth areas. So things get the headlines like IP, AI, ESG, all of these shiny, interesting, the super shiny areas of law. But really, where the big shortages are happening, it's in property, in probate, and advocacy. We don't have nearly enough people doing conveyancing, which is a part of the reason why conveyancing takes longer. The other part is regulatory burden. We have more transactions than before, and less people doing it. Tech can solve a lot of things, but not the fact that you need people to do the transaction. Probate has been hugely overlooked. It's never taught in law degrees to any meaningful standard, so people really didn't know about it. Death and taxes are a certainty in England and Wales and any other country, really. So we've got an aging population with complex estates and lots of property to transfer. A government that's increasingly looking at inheritance tax, so private client work is just people are swamped. And then we have a shortage in advocacy skills, so we don't have enough people able to represent people in court. Criminal, family work, all of these areas that involve a lot of advocacy, plus business disputes, big skills gaps there. And interestingly, flowing in with all of that, I'm seeing things happening regionally. So Manchester, Leeds, Birmingham. These places are absolutely booming. And I hadn't been to the center of Leeds for a long time. And I went up to Evershed's offices last winter. And I couldn't believe I got out at Leeds. It was incredible, the change and the glass towers and hotels and canals. But going into the firms, you know, that's what really matters. You can have all the buildings, what's going on, the vibrancy, the growth that's happening. And I'm seeing that, you know, that there's all this growth going on. And even younger law graduates are becoming less London-centric because they're saying, okay, I can see newly qualified salaries are 105, 110, 150,000 for American firms, for example. But what's going to cost to live in London, and do I really want to sacrifice so much of myself for that. And that's where they're looking at Birmingham, they're looking at Manchester, they're looking at Leeds, and they offer incredible quality of life and growing. So, recruitment, we're seeing, a big shift. I think this was always sort of there when we started 10 years ago, but it's much more pronounced. Particularly in the practice areas and this regional renaissance, if I can call it that, which I think is a good thing, because we need to. I should have said Bristol as well. Bristol is another area, another great hub. I'm going to upset a few cities now because I've not mentioned Cardiff and others. But regionally speaking, even across to the corner of Kent where we are in, people are saying, well, hang on, I can have this quality of life and be in Folkestone, for example. Why do I need to be in London? So, changing trends, and the standard recruitment model isn't going to crack the nut here, when you've got all of these competing issues that were much more under the surface, say 10 years ago, I think.
So, Dino, in light of these trends that you're seeing, and I appreciate you've probably touched upon this slightly in your earlier answers, but what are some of the current misconceptions that law firms have about the motivations and interests of new talent, I guess, presently in 2025?
I love some myth busting. It's my favorite thing. Misconceptions. Well, I think there's one that's been around for a long time, and that's the pay packet that shouts the loudest. It did. It definitely did. Not that long ago, but nowadays, no, not so much. The people we work with anyway are looking at progression and purpose over salary. Salary is important, but not at all costs. And if they can't see progression and purpose in what they do, all the money in the world is not going to solve the problem. The kind of other misconception I see that filters through from that one is the prestige status. So the showing off of the shiny glass offices, the exterior, the brochures, the external. These names, these facilities, and all of that, they don't impress people enough to take a job anymore. People want to come in and see the culture. And people would much rather have a better culture and less air-conditioned shiny offices. I say air-conditioned is pretty important right
Yeah,
now.
it is now,
But if you can have all the great facilities in the world, but if the culture isn't there, people aren't going to buy it. And another one that's thankfully, dying a death now is the saying that, well, they'll just have to adapt. They'll suck it up. They'll Sometimes firms would use the word mold, and rarely it would be them just, crack the mold, make them fit into whatever it is we do. And thankfully, the new generation just don't tolerate these outdated practices, and law has a lot of bad hangovers from days gone by, and practices of that days gone by, which people won't take anymore. So I think law firm leaders are changing as the demographic of law firm leaders changes. The very first people we trained 10 years ago are now leading law firms. So we're seeing a big shift in those people. There's a generation change still to happen, I think, but progress is happening. It really is. And that's fantastic. And then I guess the last thing I'd say is this one I get a lot, and you guys probably see it a lot too, is, well, we'll just do the traditional way we've always recruited. We put it, I see it on LinkedIn, I see a job spec. I'm like, this is social media. We don't want to see a job spec. At the risk of talking marketing talk very, very badly, you've got your top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, and your bottom of the funnel. The job spec should be at the end. You really want to attract people to say, why is it good to work at this firm? Why do you want to relocate to Bristol? All of these things, and then get to the job spec. But I just see it all the time. There's a job spec. And yes, that worked. It worked great. But LinkedIn, social media, the internet is not just a place to post up job specs. And the kind of problem is, that's how, when I started using the internet, that's what the internet was sort of for. There wasn't discussion. I mean, I think I've had LinkedIn for probably going on something like 18 years, 15 years. People didn't talk to each other on LinkedIn. It was all very corporate. Now people talk. So it worked then. But now I think that these sort of traditional recruiting practices, the younger generation just don't buy it. I mean, we see it with the amount of students have talked to me, and I said, oh, well, would you like me to put you in touch with someone to see what it's like to study the course? And said, no, I've already done that. So what do you mean? Well, I went on the Law Training Centre alumni page, and I've contacted some people on there, and they've told me what it's like there already. So I'm like, they're going to make great lawyers. They're doing their own research. They're reaching out to people. It's peer-to-peer stuff. And It's not about even the Google reviews and all the other review platforms that you see. People are reaching out to people in the age of misinformation. You know, they're actually looking for people, and people are much more accessible. You know, everybody's contactable some way. So why not? So I think that's quite scary, I guess, for a lot of law firms. But if they're just getting the right resources, you don't have to overcomplicate. And you don't have to become TikTok famous solicitor like some have with particular songs. You don't have to, you know, but move it forward from just slapping up a job spec, I think will go a huge, huge way.
Yeah, because I think, if you're putting up just a job spec, it might then also send the signal that the law firm is, behind with the times. They're not up to speed with what works on and that
That's a
people
really good
in
point, actually. It's kind of a window into what's going on in the firm. And if it feels that way, people are already put off thinking, oh gosh, it's going to be really dry. There's no personality in me, but in reality, all law firms have amazing personalities and they all have unique personalities. But we because of the way we regulate, it's kind of scared to show it.
I've experienced that.
So, in contrast, what are students, recent grads, and career changers actually telling you that they're looking for from a law firm?
There's some non-negotiables and then there's some nice to haves. And I think if we start with the non-negotiables, that's really cracks a lot of the problem here. Firstly, hybrid working. You know, people that I've surveyed, 70% of them won't even apply. Now, don't get me wrong, we're not talking about people wanting to work fully remotely. There are some people who do that, but the recent grads and new entrants to the market are looking for hybrid. They want the office environment, they want that experience. They are tired of working from their front room, their mum's front room, or their bedroom. You know, they've done this for years now. They've studied through it. You know, I think we're all fed up of it, unless you've got enough space to have a separate office. Even then, you know, I'm a big fan. I love working remotely and all of that, but sometimes I will change venue. It's important. But what they're looking for is hybrid, and they really mean hybrid. So it needs to be, we have a place you can come, and when you come in, it's going to be for something good. We're going to have, you know, our team meetings, our, you know, social events, bonding, you know, organization, and not meaning the cheesy sense and having ping pong tables and all of that kind of stuff, but real human interaction. That's really important. Because people are just not applying because they've also realized, you know, we have the cost of childcare, the cost of pet care, the complexity of our lives, the amount of times we have to, you know, even just getting a car MOT'd, you know, having that flexibility to be able to just sort your life out sometimes goes a long, long way. So when people are used to that, it's very hard for them to now adjust their life because you can't just outsource all of this stuff, right? And the other big one is clear progression paths. Now, people have cottoned on to the vague promises that law firms have made. Law firms have made a lot of vague promises to young talent. You'll get qualified eventually. Show us what you can do, and then you'll get qualified. People aren't buying that anymore. They're like, look, we need a clear pathway. So if you say you're going to train and develop, well, what is it going to be? Is it going to be a license conveyancer qualification? When will it start? What are the, you know, milestones I need to achieve before you unlock that funding? And what support will I get for the chartered legal executive route for the SQE? You know, the questions are the same. What does the actual roadmap look like? And all that means is law firms just have to plan a little bit more in advance about it. And bearing in mind, plans can change, business environment changes. So I understand that there's possibly a reluctance, and every plan can be written out to say, well, depending on demand. So, for example, if we take on someone and promise them we're going to make them a conveyancer, but the conveyancing work slows down for a period, obviously that plan needs to be delayed. There's business reasons. Lawyers know this. And if they don't, they can use an employment lawyer, but really, an HR person solves these issues. So, but having these clear progression paths, because I'm seeing the best talent. So you just look at the volume of applications, right? But the best talent won't even apply because it isn't a clear pathway. They will go somewhere where there is a clear pathway. And they will wait it out if they can. They'll work in non-law jobs until they get to get that one. That's what the really
That's
good
really
talent is doing.
interesting.
Yeah, they absolutely will. I mean, one of the posts I'll be doing is one of our learners who went from McDonald's to being fully qualified soon. And he was very, very bright chap, really clear what he wanted to do. And he said, well, you know, I'll pay the bills, I'll work at McDonald's, it's fine. And the customer service skills, you know, usually beneficial. But here's the thing that I get from a lot of law firms, and it baffles me that it's still a thing, because it happens in other industries as well. But it's the mindset just needs to shift. And people are like, well, what if I train them and they leave? Okay, now let's just unpack that one. There's a cost involved, right? So, however, there'll be a training agreement in place that if a person leaves within a certain amount of time, there's a repayment period. And some firms that are quite aggressive might poach a person, they'll pay for that. So the financial hit doesn't really happen. Well, what's more worrying is the time that they invest in training the person. And there's a bit of an emotional hit, if I could put it that way. There's a softer skill rather than the balance sheet hit, which I understand. It's terrible. I don't like people to leave, even within our organization, but people will progress. The people nowadays working 5 years in a job, this is quite normal. Back when I was starting out at university, if you swap jobs every 5 years, you'd be called a job hopper. Now today you'd be like, oh, I'm very stable. This is just the pace of change that we have. But the bigger question is, what if I don't train them and they stay? Now, in a law firm environment, what does that mean? People are unskilled. People aren't properly appreciated. People aren't properly equipped. What happens in a law firm? They make mistakes. Sometimes it can result in an insurance claim. And it is not uncommon for law firms to face significant financial difficulties and have to sometimes go into administration because they simply cannot afford the professional indemnity insurance renewal after a claim has been made. It is an incredibly high-risk area that we operate in, with lots of risk and regulation and cost that comes with it. Having people qualify reduces that risk, brings down all of these issues. And so I weigh it up and say, well, let's say you train 10 people, two of them leave, three of them leave, four of them leave, five of them leave, but five stay and are doing a better job for your clients, for your insurers, for your regulators, and for everybody involved in the firm. And I think that is a big mindset shift that I'm seeing in a lot of firms, especially regional firms. And that's what's also driving a lot of their success in recruitment, looking at that. And then a couple of other things I should probably just add there is real mental health support. So not just giving a helpline, an employee helpline, but actual a bit of compassion in the workplace goes a long, long way. And tech exposure, the general, and I'm talking across age groups, want exposure to it. To allay that anxiety that they're going to be replaced by AI, they want to be working with AI. So they get to grips with start using it. In the same way, we all have to get to grips with using, online law libraries instead of physical paper libraries. People feel much more comfortable, and then their skills will multiply and upskill themselves as well. So if that's what people are asking for, I don't know how much of it is being fed back to law firms, how much of it they're hearing, because in your traditional interview setting, people might not say that, but that's what people are telling me. And this is people who are in jobs, people who are looking to enter the market as well, the real brightest of the bright.
Yeah, thank you. And I think, you touched on this earlier, but also when people feel valued in an environment, like that's only going to work favorably to the general culture of a firm or, of any company as well. So it seems to be a win-win.
No, absolutely. That sort of puts me on the nice to haves, because I talked about the must haves there, but the nice to haves, your culture. Well, how do you build a culture? People talk about culture all the time, but culture isn't a theoretical thing. You have to take action. And even that action of having clear plans, progressing people, that goes so beyond that meeting where you've agreed a training plan, because it has a ripple effect for years to come. And that's the kind of intangible stuff. And it's not controlled in a business plan. It's not written down somewhere, but that's what culture looks like. So when people see that, it has this ripple effect on the whole, on the rest of the stuff that I talked about, the non-negotiables. So you sort of have to do both, but if you do the non-negotiables, the nice to haves kind of look after themselves.
So we often think about marketing as client facing, but it's increasingly about attracting talent too, as we've been talking about. And as you said, people are using LinkedIn to contact people at law firms. They're shopping around. They're finding out what it's like to work at these firms. So, what ways do you think that law firms' marketing strategy can influence its success with the recruitment?
So I'm going to give a non-marketing answer, I think. I'll leave the marketing part to the experts, right? I know you guys are excellent at what you do, but my opinion on it is it's not about pretty websites. I think in some cases the website's important, But the website used to be the first point of call, right? We didn't have anywhere else to go to see a law firm. I mean, Google Maps even does it. You Google a place, it gives you the direction. Google summarizes the whole place before you even go. So if I'm going to a place, I don't even have to look at the website. I get the pictures, I get the reviews, I get the directions, I get everything. Opening hours, the lot. You know, not that long ago, you actually had to go to a website, scroll back to the footer or the contact page somewhere, find out opening hours, all of this kind of, it's taking that away. And obviously AI is going to take that away even more because it'll just read it out to you, especially if you know, native sort of AI user. So it's much more than just, you know, the shiny websites. It's really about this authentic visibility that people want to see. And I think, you know, something that resonates deeply with me, and I know it resonates with our learners, are case studies. And I've seen it with law firm partners who started using case studies, showcasing their people, you know, the things they've told me about the quality and the volume of applicants, but importantly, the quality of applications have improved by sharing them. And I'm not talking about doing shiny video produced things that take 6 months to get off the ground and cost an absolute fortune. I'm talking about re some of them are not even video based. I mean, we like video, and I know algorithms like video. But even simple, nice picture, not a, you know, doesn't have to be the corporate headshot, and the person's story in their words. Because remember, peers want to hear from their peers, and they want to see people they can identify with. And if it's overly polished, overly produced, the person's authentic voice is lost. And I know this word authentic gets used a heck of a lot in marketing, and I mean it in the most simplest of forms. The person's just really being who the person is. Let them speak the story. That really, I see that happening. So, you know, showcasing people's talents, showcasing the wins, but also showing the culture of the place. Don't use all these stock. I hate these stock images that I see everywhere. It's like show the place. And sure, maybe the offices aren't absolutely perfect, but that's character. Most law firms, many law firms are in very old buildings, and that has character. People like that. Some people who want a shiny new, brand new office, well, they wouldn't apply. So might as well show them, because don't sort of lead them on with what the place isn't. And then they turn up for an interview and they find out the facilities are completely different. And very, really importantly, law firms need to, you know, the ones that are doing it are absolutely smashing it. I'm having a live a panel session tomorrow evening, actually, with a firm who's absolutely nailed this. They showcase all the routes. So law firms always talk about training contracts, but that's only a small fraction of the people they train. People who are training through the CLC route, the license conveyancer route, the Silex routes. It's happening now, especially the last 2 years, I think, but showcasing all these routes and explaining how the law firm actually supported, and not just saying we paid for the course, but how do we support the person to train, that you just see a massive spike in the quality of applications, because law firms aren't struggling to get applications. Volume is not an issue. It's never been an issue, but it's the quality of applicant. And by that, I don't necessarily mean just the personal characteristics. I mean the person is genuinely motivated to apply. That's what I mean by quality of applicant. They're saying, like, I've seen what your firm looks like. I understand, I identify with so and so who's working there. And that's a great quality candidate, I think, you know, beyond all the academics and requisite stuff, which everybody has to lesser or more degree.
Yeah, I would agree with what you were saying about the social media posts. I think showcasing the people, I think, is the main thing, and showcasing where you will be working and what kind of cases you'll be working on and all this kind of thing. That's more beneficial and to the person applying than, like you said before, just a job spec that's posted and nothing else supporting it. So yeah, I totally agree with that. And they, from my experience, tend to be the most engaged with posts. They get more click-throughs because that's the thing people want to see,
Totally. And something that I always tend to think about is, social media tends to be the sort of shop front, whether it be for any business, but obviously in this instance with law firms, it's what people see, it's what people pay attention to, especially nowadays. So yeah, very important.
Can I ask you guys a question? Do you get this a lot where law firms say, well, we have no problem recruiting because every time I put an advert up, I get hundreds of applications?
Yes, sometimes I think it depends on where the law firm is, but yeah, I think generally the applicants are not the problem. It's just getting the right talent into the firm, as you said before. I think,
Exactly that. I
yeah.
get so many law firms saying, well, I get a good volume. I'm like, well, that's why you have a problem. You're getting a high volume, but you've got one job, two jobs, three, five jobs. You don't need 500 CVs. You don't want them. I mean, don't you just want five perfect CVs? Don't you want five perfect fits?
You want less
You know,
work.
so absolutely, absolutely. So, and that's where the quality improves because people say, well, I've seen where the office is. I know the location. I like that part of the country. I'm happy to relocate there. Or I'm absolutely no chance I'm going to live in that part of the country. So I'm not going to bother applying. You know, be clear, you know, on what the culture looks like. What is hybrid, you know, just saying hybrid work, what does it actually look like? You know, can people go out and get the dog and take it for a walk? You know, what does it actually look like? You know, beyond just the hours and whatever it is that's in there, you know, that then suddenly I don't think it drops the number of applicants. It might even increase applicants, but the quality is so much better that then you're not having to go through these convoluted CV sifting exercises for you've got good quality.
It's like pulling back the curtain a little bit, isn't it? Because I think we were talking before about how law firms are maybe almost a little bit scared to show things and show what's going on, because it's a very regulated industry. But I think that's the most important thing, really, because that's what people are going to respond to the most. And some firms, I think, still see it as an optional thing. But as you were saying, Ellie, it is the kind of the first place that people go to these days. You know, social media is now turning into a search engine even as well. So I think it's one of those things that law firms are going to have to do more, on social media.
So, as you know, we've kind of spoken about earlier, we know that the legal sector is kind of notorious for being competitive. But from your experience, Dina, what are some of the biggest barriers people face when trying to secure a job in a law firm?
I'm glad you used the word competitive. Competitive is fine. Lawyers are competitive people. They like to be competitive. That's not an issue. It's the barriers that are changing but are still immense. Traditionally, financially, you're looking at anything from 45 to 60,000 pounds on tuition fees alone. That's not including your living costs as well. So it's not uncommon for people to be coming out with £100,000 of debt somewhere, whether it's to the student finance company, whether it's to the bank of mum and dad or grandparents or whatever, somewhere along the line, this is what it's costing people. It's a huge amount of money. Then there's the academic requirements, these specific sort of A levels, specific kind of degrees, which in a lot of ways have almost lost touch with what real practice looks like. And some of these requirements, they're no less rigorous alternative routes, no less rigorous at all. But in terms of not needing the specific types of degrees, so for example, you always needed a law degree to qualify as a solicitor. You'll be amazed to hear that you don't need a law degree to qualify as a solicitor anymore. However, it doesn't make it any easier. What it is looking at and saying, well, we recognize that the profession is becoming increasingly specialized. So if we put it in a marketing context, if we had someone who was a chartered marketer, someone with a lot of experience in the marketing business, social media, IP, and all of this, and wanted to add an interest in law, they would make an incredible lawyer representing marketing firms because they would understand the business. A lot of clients' time is wasted explaining the problem to a lawyer when if a person had experience in the industry, would just get it already. Because a lot of problems in law are negotiated long before the courtroom, as they should be. But that requires having different backgrounds. So that's why, you know, it's not easier by not having a law degree. There's welcoming of other qualifications as well, but that's making the profession better, more useful to people. So that, you know, that barrier around having to go to this particular school, get that particular qualification is a big one. Another big one is the sort of geography. So the idea that you have to go to London to sort of qualify, that's a huge barrier. And some of the other ones that are sort of a bit softer is the social capital. There's this, you know, you can get into the top law school, and we see this with Oxford grads, Oxbridge graduates, and I know one personally, King's College graduate. She got into King's College, she got a 2-1 law degree, absolute top law school. She didn't have the social capital to land the jobs that her peers did because they had come through a system that is not just based on merit, but it's based on your social capital, your connections, so on. This is a huge barrier. It's changing, but it's still a big sort of barrier. And then there's time. There's all this, 6 years plus to qualify on the traditional routes, which was fine 20 years ago. Nowadays, time's measured differently. People look at, well, I want to be working. I don't want to be a student for this long. How can I do that? And there might be financial pressures, but even now more so, I'm seeing more people strategically choosing and electing, even though they can't afford it. So, well, why should I burn into savings? Why should I burn into my parents' savings? I want to be earning and studying and finding routes that are either more flexible or going to take less time. And then we've got some pretty modern barriers. I think there's a lot of information overload. I think we're all information overloaded at the moment. Honestly, it's unbelievable the amount of information we have on our phone. It's too much. So there's, in some ways, some people are finding there's too many options. There's not enough pathways. And that's what I spend a lot of time with. It's to the point now where I used to do it once a month. I'm doing it on a weekly basis when I'm doing live sessions for people just to talk about the pathways. Because I thought, well, who's going to want to hear the same thing over week in, week out? Well, turns out people need help. All the information I talk about, a lot of what I talk about is on the internet. But to actually piece it all together, even when ChatGPT gets it horribly wrong, by the way. So it misses out so much stuff, really out of date. Some of the websites it uses, when I click the link with the source, I'm like, wow, this is really out of date. That's impressive. I forgot about that. So people want to be have a discussion, and they have questions. I want to talk to someone. And then you've got the technology anxiety that I talked about AI. And this is, one of the ones that is still kind of it's still creeping over. This Everyone's saying paralegal job needs to have work experience, a bit like saying marketing junior marketing executive role needs to have marketing experience. Well, if no one's given the work experience, how are they going to get the experience? And this catch-22 cycle that's going around, it's still hanging around a little bit too persistently. There's some roles that, yes, it makes sense, but in the main, when you're talking about junior roles, well, look at the aptitude and give the person the experience.
No, totally. And I guess in light of this, then, this kind of feeds in nicely to what are businesses like yours, like the Law Training Centre, doing to boost kind of accessibility in the industry?
Well, I guess you could say there's things that we're doing directly and indirect things. So in some of the direct stuff that we're doing, and this is at the core of what we did, it's multiple entry points. So when he told me about chartered legal executives and we met this partner who was an equity partner and qualified this way, I was like, well, that's great. That's one alternative. But then I started looking at all the options, and I realized one of the big barriers is lack of choice. Because with law, it's always been a sort of one-way road that you've got to go down. And one of the things I learned, especially growing up in South Africa, is that without choice, this is a serious hidden barrier that people don't sort of see. So we give multiple entry points. People can join from out of school, they have a law degree, they can be a paralegal, they could have worked in a law firm already, and they can choose different qualifications. And let's say someone starts out wanting to be a licensed conveyancer, but find out actually family law is a much more interesting qualification for them. They could use that study towards becoming a solicitor in family law, for example, this exemption. So we've mapped it all together. So giving people a choice of when they start, but also whilst they're qualifying, helps, people move along. Because all too often people say, I got stuck on this particular point because there was no other option. That's very common in law. And then flexible study. So we make it possible for people to study anytime, anywhere. It's completely online, fully available. You can print off stuff. There's a huge amount of materials to cater for different learning styles as well. Some people are more auditory, some people are visual, a whole mix. Having that choice again of materials. If a person had to use every single resource we offered, they would probably never finish the course. So they don't have to use everything, but it's there for people for choice. And then, other big ones around the finances. Now, this is a real big barrier. So people who can afford it, even who are being offered student loans, are saying, no, I don't want to get into debt, not with the way interest rates are. Understanding that, £200 a month today equals thousands and thousands of pounds by the time you're 50. I want to be earning. So having the flexibility to earn and learn at the same time, this wasn't really possible. There was always part-time study, sort of night school, but it was never designed for people to be studying flexibly. It was just the stuff that everybody else would do full-time. You've just got to cram it in less time. That's not flexible learning. That's just And a lot of online courses are like that. It's just all the stuff that you would learn in the classroom setting just stuck up online, and then you've got to wade your way through. And it is a badge of honor to study part-time and work around things, but it shouldn't have to be that. But that's not the way we certainly do it. So, on that, we've done scholarships ourselves. We've helped 354 learners with scholarships awarded over £200,000 as of today. We also got selected by the SRA for a Access and Reinvestment Fund. So that's going to fund around 10 more people to qualify through the solicitor route for the assessments. And we're now supporting Silex Foundation. So there's a separate foundation that Silex have running. We're going to support that with additional scholarships. So we'll be doubling up on the scholarship that they get so that the money that is awarded to the person to train with us is less that they have to use for the course, so more people can access the funding. So those are like direct things that we're doing to help people change. And then there's the indirect stuff that goes around it, raising awareness. People don't know enough about the alternative routes. When they do find out about the alternative routes, they're like, hang on, if it was so much cheaper, if it was so much more flexible, why isn't everybody doing it? Raise understand Laying those concerns where people are, why haven't I heard about it before? And the simple reason is we're too busy just doing it. And because some of these courses cost a fraction of a university degree and become a licensed conveyance from start to finish is under £6,000 in total, there isn't this huge margin that you have on law degrees and things where they're measuring tens and tens of thousands of pounds to be spending on lots of marketing that all these big institutions sort of do. So helping people raise awareness and also helping firms talk more about it, because thousands of firms actually do it. They just don't talk enough about the fact that they do it. And that validates in people's minds. They'll be like, hang on, Dino's told me it's a great course and I'll get a job with this course, but I need to hear it from a law firm. Oh, hang on, there is a law firm in my town that actually has a chartered legal executive as a partner, and this person started out as a paralegal. You need to see what you want to become in whatever and identify with it. So, and there's thousands of examples out there. We just don't talk about it enough. So that's a lot of what my time is spent doing at the moment. And selfishly, I really enjoy it as well. Nothing gives me greater pleasure in what we do than seeing people succeed. So it's a very happy part of what I get to do.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing an amazing thing to have, because not everybody loves, what they do. So it's nice to have, to have a passion and be able to do that as a job. It's amazing. So we've talked about a lot about the challenges and the opportunities in recruitment. If you had to give just one piece of advice to someone starting out, looking, at getting into the legal sector this year, what would it be?
Just one.
Well, I mean, if you've got more, go for it.
Well, I would say the first piece of advice is take the job. And what do I mean by that? If there's a job in a law firm, take it. And it could be, and I've seen people do all sorts of things, working in the mail room, in the post room. And I've got a post coming out about that, actually. One of our earliest learners, Sophie, she did exactly this. She's an associate in now the, I think, I believe it's the oldest law firm in the country, in fact. She took a job in the law firm. She had a great law degree from a great university, but she didn't turn her nose up at that. I've seen people take jobs. Big law firms have company vans where they move documents and things around. People have done that. Making the tea, that's still a thing. Yeah. All of these roles, why do I do that? Now, this is quite a hard thing to swallow, because I was there too. I was like, hang on, I've got an excellent law degree. I have, Dean's List, amazing academic achievement. Why should I do all of this? It's quite hard when you're in your early 20s to put that ego aside, I'll admit, but there's a really good reason for that. Why? Law firms really hire from within. They promote from within. The people who've really progressed, they didn't come knocking on the door from the outside in. And law firms need that sort of comfort and security that the person knows them and they know the person. And when a person is there and they say, oh, hang on, well, Sophie has a great law degree. Why is she working in the mail room? Or did you know she's studying Silex by herself? Hang on. And this is exactly what happens on a weekly basis with us. Law firms will be like, hang on, you're doing this role, but you're studying in the evenings and you're paying for it yourself. What's going on here? That's an amazing initiative. We need to talk about this. And then we'll get a call saying, look, can you please refund the fees? We're going to take over the study with this person, support them further. This goes on all the time. It's never advertised, these jobs. They're just not advertised. But so you know the expression, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. It's also the right place at the right time. Luck doesn't just happen. If you're not there, you're not going to get lucky. So be there. And oh, I'm not saying now, you know, don't disappear into the background, you know, make it known that what you're doing and be a little patient as well, but it happens. And, you know, I've got hundreds of stories of people doing that. So that's my one job. But if I'm allowed a second one, that's my one piece of advice. If I'm allowed a second one.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
It's okay.
It's look at all the routes. Look at all the routes. Don't just do the thing that everybody else in your class is doing. You've got to look at your circumstances. You've got to look at your location. You've got to look at your interests. And people diverge after school. You know, at school, you sort of hot hours together, having the same interests or think you have the same interests. And, you know, one of my old friends from school got in touch on LinkedIn. I haven't heard from him in 20-something years. And he's in recruitment. I never thought he'd be in recruitment. In a million years, I never thought he'd be in recruitment. In Australia, I could see him in Australia. He loves sport. I definitely see him in Australia, but never saw him being in recruitment.
Yeah.
And when I looked at, you know, my friend group from school, the diverse things we're doing, and not one of them, that to be fair, they would have said, yeah, Dino is a lawyer. Law school, they probably would never have guessed that, because what we do today was frankly impossible. I left school in 98 when the internet had just sort of been invented, so it wasn't actually possible to do that. But, you know, don't look at what everyone else is doing, because you will diverge, and that's okay. You know, you'll keep some friends, and you'll have similar interests, and you'll make new people along the way. So look at all the other routes. Don't just do what everybody else is doing, because oftentimes through peer pressure, people put themselves in unsustainable situations, and it's different when you're at school. There's a safety net around you, but now when you're out in the real world, well, we don't have that safety net. We're supposed to be adults and do that and make those decisions for ourselves. So explore those routes. Take the time, even if it's a few days, talk to other people and then see what the right fit is. And if you come back to the same conclusion, at least you know you've checked, because there's nothing worse than thinking, did I make the right decision? And that will happen a lot.
Yeah. I think it's interesting about, you know, just taking back to your initial one about taking a job within a, you know, any job within a law firm, because I suppose the other benefit as well is just, you know, being around in that environment, you kind of just, you're soaking up things just being there anyway. You know, you're taking in what people are saying, you're picking up things, so even just that in itself is valuable, even if, you know, you are in the mailroom or making tea or whatever it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. You learn so much. I mean, being the mailroom, you'll even learn about which of the departments that have a lot of mail, which ones have less mail, which ones are using tricks to serve by paper only. You learn so much about procedure and what's going on and the interactions that you'll have. And of course, you'll also be more likely to get to legal networking events, which is huge, absolutely huge and really valuable. But you've got to be there to get into these things. You've got to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess on the flip side of that, what's the one piece or two pieces of advice that you would give law firms when they are, you know, looking to recruit new talent in?
I should have seen that one coming, really. It's similar, but flipped on its head in a way. You know, I tell law firms, look beyond traditional credentials.
Yeah.
You know, people say, well, everybody has a law degree. Everybody has a 2-1. And largely that's true. It's become quite common. So look beyond the traditional credentials, you know, really look in what we've seen, and our data shows it, and our law firm partners who put people through our routes do this because they've seen how beyond the traditional credentials, how people following the alternative routes outperform. And why do they do that? It's not just about aptitude. It's not just about academics, but it's having that real world work experience. It's having that understanding of what law actually is in practice and not being afraid to turn up the next day to the job. You know, they also understand clients, they understand client pressures. They've worked around clients from early on in their careers. Can you imagine not having that much client interaction and then the day you're qualified, you get thrown a big client?
Yeah.
You know, the jump is enormous. Whereas working with the clients, building up to that point when you're naturally comfortable. So when the day comes to be qualified and you're sort of flying solo, so to speak, you're totally confident. Clients absolutely appreciate that. Goes a long, long way. And that sort of leads into what commercially mature, because I see all this talk about commercial awareness, and law students always ask me which newspaper should I read, which article should I read. And I said, it's great, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, The Economist, these are all fantastic things to know about. But we now have a problem on the high street in Canterbury. A person is understanding how to solve their estate, and they have a property in Spain and a property in Canterbury and a property in Scotland. The big headline news, the macro picture of what's going on and what the Chancellor's planning for inheritance tax reform in a year's time, isn't really going to help you in today's situation. So by having people who've come through alternative routes, who've worked day in, day out, they immediately are able to be practical. And that's what I call commercial maturity. They know how to actually be commercial with the clients, because at the end of the day, a law firm is a business. It's providing a service, and it has to be value for money service as well. So it's one thing to be aware, but what can you actually do for the person? And that you tend to find from people who've come through alternative routes, who've been working in the firm. So that sort of leads me on to my second piece, if I'm allowed.
Yes, absolutely.
If you do all of this in a law firm, you're doing really well. If you're supporting people through all of those routes, you're doing really well, and you know it because your clients are happy. But please shout out about it. Showcase their progression. I think I talked about it earlier. Showcase the story. It doesn't have to be this massively overproduced production. It can be a written piece by the person. Let them share their insights, what it was like to study and work at the same time. Well, how has it benefited them? You will improve your recruitment process to absolutely no end, because you will suddenly find that people who are applying are, funnily enough, identifying and similar to the people that you've invested in. And you just get, it makes life so much easier.
Okay.
There's a lot more, but I'll stop there, I think.
Okay, well, I do, to be honest, that's a great note to end on, because now we're going to kind of switch up a bit. We're on our final segment, and the word segment is a pun in this case, because at Conscious, as you may or may not know, Dina, we love all things orange. So we've brought in this kind of
I've
new,
never noticed Orange and Conscious.
be
I've
honest,
never noticed it, really. I don't
really
know.
subtle, isn't it?
We're, ignore
You
this.
got surprisingly low key for Orange today. This is the least
Yeah,
Orange
it was his
Conscious
thing.
I've ever had.
We're quite drab today.
I know. For the next episode, we'll have to
Yeah,
come
we'll be
wearing
bright orange.
something a bit more appropriate in that sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're introducing a sort of new segment, again, pun intended, that's a quick fire question round to kind of end the recording on, and to just, I guess, summarize some key takeaways from this episode. So if possible, Dino, just quick, short, snappy answers, but obviously,
Sure.
there's no time frame. Okay, so first question is, what's the biggest misconception about marketing in law firms?
That's an easy one. Lawyers don't do marketing.
Okay. What's
They don't
one?
need to, apparently.
No.
Somebody else always does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys?
So, and the second question is, what's one thing you wish you knew when starting out?
I wish I'd known there were other ways. I really wish I'd known there were other ways. Whether or not it would have changed even our trajectory, what we did, what we studied, what we did, I don't know for certain. But not knowing the other ways, when I found out, I felt like I'd been robbed. I felt like I'd been cheated. And I just wish I'd known the other way. Sometimes knowing that there's a choice, whether it affects your choice or not, just knowing that there is a choice changes things a lot.
I guess that lends itself to all the work that you're doing currently, almost like paying it forward in that way, which is really great. So the final question is, what's one thing someone could do today to take a step toward their legal career?
Connect with me on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And that, do you know what? A brilliant way to end.
Yeah, no, and I mean that because I share a lot of information, a lot of stories about it, a lot of employers that are hiring, and I run almost weekly sessions now. I don't think that's going away anytime soon. And it's not about the follower count and all of that. It's about the value, and that's what I see the power of that for. So yeah, if I can be of value, please do.
Yeah, we will absolutely be pointing obviously to your LinkedIn page when we post this episode. So yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Dino, for today. It's been great, and I have actually learned quite a lot
Yeah,
myself.
likewise.
So yeah,
No,
brilliant.
thank you. This has been really fun. This has been really good, actually, guys. Yeah, really good.
Where can people find you online? Obviously LinkedIn. But where else, what's your website?
LinkedIn at our website, ltckent.co.uk. We do have TikTok channels, we do have Instagram channels, but if it's me you're looking for, LinkedIn is the best place to find me.
Perfect.
Great.
I do appear in cameo appearances, although that isn't actually me. So there's obviously the company pages, and then there's my page on LinkedIn. People are welcome to connect there and get in touch with questions. And if I'm not available anytime, someone in the team will pick up queries as well. But yeah, I do welcome these queries. I do welcome interacting with people and firm leaders about these challenges that they have, because some of them are quite unique, some of them are quite personal to the situation as well, and it requires a sort of personal touch. So yeah, that's a big part of what I like to do.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. It's been brilliant. And good luck with everything. And we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Conscious Podcast. A big thank you to Dino Dulab for sharing his insights on the changing recruitment landscape and how law firms can better connect with the talent of tomorrow. We hope you found this discussion valuable and that it's given you lots of insights to reflect on. Make sure you follow or connect with Dino and the Law Training Centre on LinkedIn for more insight into the legal recruitment and training landscape. If you're enjoying the Conscious Podcast, please subscribe, leave a review, or share this episode with someone in your network. Until next time, stay curious and stay conscious.